Hello, everyone, and welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes. I'm an author, lifestyle entrepreneur, former pro athlete, and world record holder in football. My goal with the School of Greatness is to share with you stories from the most inspiring business minds, world-class athletes, and influential celebrities on the planet to find out what makes great people great. So please leave us a review on iTunes and join us on the web at schoolofgreatness.com to be notified of each episode when it comes out. Now let's get after it. Hey, 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 what's up, guys? Thanks so much for checking out this episode. And before I get into it and introduce who my next guest is for the School of Greatness, I just want to say a big thank you to everyone out there who's been listening, downloading, commenting. You guys have been leaving me some amazing messages online about this show, and it's extremely inspiring and motivating me to continue bringing on great guests for you and covering this topic on the School of Greatness. Now, wanted to say something really quick. I've had a lot of five-star reviews on iTunes. Just want to say thanks to a few of the people out there who've left some reviews, and I'll mention a few at the end. But Julia Price, I saw, left a great message. Canal Girl, Chicago Crazy, Chris G10. I see Daniel Coleman, The Motivated Creative, Todd Bowen, Ram427, Johnny King, Nicola James, lots of great people. I'll mention some more at the very end again, but you guys are a part of the reason what's driving me to continue doing this, and that's extremely positive. Had well over 20,000 downloads in the first couple of weeks of the podcast. It's been on the top of the new and noteworthy section on iTunes, pretty much in the first few spots every day. So I couldn't do it without you guys. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And our next guest that I'm bringing on is a cool guy that I've recently met, and his name's David Anderson. Now, he played in the NFL for about 6 years, and he'll actually share his story here in just a second. But this is a guy that does not really look like an amazing athlete. When you meet him, when you talk to him, you know, he's a smaller guy, but he played at the top level of one of the most athletic leagues in the world, the NFL, and he played at a high level for a long time. Now, we're going to talk about his whole story, what he really did while he was there, kind of some interesting stuff he did with Peyton Manning and some of the best quarterbacks in the world, what he learned from them, the mindset of a champion, and some other great things. He'll get into that in a second, but I just want to take a quick minute to let you know that we have a new sponsor for the show. And the sponsor is Onnit.com. Now, with that, let's get into the interview with my man, David Anderson.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
What's up, everyone? Hope you're having a great day today. I'm with a new friend of mine who we've hit it off pretty well. We just had lunch here in Hollywood area, and now we're back at my place in West Hollywood. Thought we'd get together and do a little recording for the School of Greatness. His name is David Anderson, and he is a six-year NFL vet, wide receiver for the Houston Texans most of your time, and then tell me a little bit more about what were the other places.
Well, Houston Texans, I had the privilege of getting cut 5 times, so if chasing your dream is something, that I definitely was doing that. But I played a little training camp with the Denver Broncos, went back to the Texans, and then finished up my career with the Washington Redskins.
Washington Redskins. And then you got, so you didn't get injured, you just got cut at the end, right?
I didn't get injured. I actually finished my career, I was just fine. I just didn't sign back with Washington. I was planning on finishing out a great season and getting a big $10 million deal like Wes Welker, but they didn't. We weren't on the same page. So instead, I just kind of waited throughout free agency and, you know, like probably 99% of the NFL retires you instead of you retiring from the NFL.
Right.
I mean, not even Brett Favre got to decide when he wanted to quit. So I walked away healthy and happy and now ready to go on to something new.
Right. So tell the listeners what type of player you resembled or what type of player.
Well, unfortunately, the NFL is a rather a label type of business.
Yeah.
You know, I'm white and I'm 5'10". So immediately, I came in the NFL and Wes Welker was still unknown. So they didn't compare me to Wes Welker. They would say Steve Tasker or Tim Dwight or, you know, basically they're 5'10 white people is what it is. Which when I always thought my game kind of resembled a little more of like a Santana Moss or Steve Smith, who actually went to Utah and was a punt returner. Granted, they actually were a little more athletic, but our numbers weren't that different.
Right.
And I was planning on playing receiver. There wasn't a position called slot receiver when I was first in the NFL.
You're going to be a wideout.
I was going to be a wideout, yeah. Just like what you think you're going to do. And not until you leave college do you realize that you're not as good as you think.
Uh-huh.
And you can't be a craft of everything. You have to learn what you do and do that well.
The best,
yeah.
Right.
There's only probably two receivers, probably not even. You wouldn't put Calvin Johnson in the middle of the field to run 5-yard outs because he's just not good at that.
Right.
Because his strides are too long or something like that. So you put him outside where he does best and his matchups are, you know, you can exploit them a little better. So you got to realize what you do well, and that happened to be in the middle of the field where some guys aren't willing to go, and a lot of guys, they grow alligator arms in the middle of the field, and I was willing to throw my body around there, and I understood the position of defense, so I was able to exploit them a little better.
Right, exactly. So you went to Colorado State, and you had four successful years there. Did you play all 4 years?
Yeah, didn't redshirt, went there right away.
Really?
Yeah, I graduated in 3.5, actually. You'd be proud of me.
Did you start as a freshman?
I did not. I started 2 games as a freshman. I didn't play my first game. My freshman year at CSU, we beat Virginia at Virginia, and then we beat CU at Mile High Stadium.
Wow.
Virginia was ranked, I think, 15. CU was number 4, and we weren't ranked. CSU was not ranked. And then we came to the Rose Bowl and played UCLA, and we lost by a 2-point conversion.
Oh.
So we were supposed to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated, but that was when Fresno State had David Carr, and they won, and they got on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Dang.
So we just missed the bus there, but yeah, played my freshman year and then started sophomore, junior, senior.
What was the most exciting game you ever played in college?
Against Colorado at their place. It was a back and forth football game. We were down 4 with like 1:30 left. We drive down the field. I catch the ball. And if there was a review, it would be a touchdown, but it was before there was the review. So they could spot the ball on the 1-yard line, and we don't have any timeouts, and there's like 28 seconds left. We have a run play. We get stuffed at the 1 again.
Whoa.
We run off the field, try to run jumbo on. We snap the ball.
For field goal.
No.
Turns
it down 4.
Oh, jumbo, gotcha.
Jumbo, the big package.
Gotcha.
They hike the ball. The running back goes the wrong way. Quarterback peels back around, gets tackled. We lose the game.
Oh, man.
They storm the field.
Oh.
I'm throwing punches at students. And that was the last game against Colorado.
Oh, man. My friend Adam Bornstein is a huge Colorado guy, graduated there. Would love to hear that story from your side. So.
Yeah, no. But
he was probably storming the field that game.
Mason Crosby, the kicker for the Packers, ruined my college career. I think he made 4 field goals over 50 yards my junior and senior year.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy.
Wow.
I mean, you're in that Colorado altitude.
Oh, right.
I'd see him warming up kicking like 75 yards.
Jeez, man. That's insane.
You kicked field goals in college?
I kicked a 42-yarder in high school, actually.
With the old toe punt?
No, man. Soccer stuff. I used to play soccer. I was a varsity soccer player my freshman year. I didn't play football until my sophomore year in high school.
I played my freshman year. It was my first year.
Did you?
Football. Yeah. I was basketball otherwise.
Yeah. I played basketball too. So, interesting. So, this is you guys are learning a lot about David, just like I am, because we just met a few hours ago. We've been talking online, via Twitter and email, back and forth, kind of talking about stuff, because David is now retired from the NFL. This was his last season was in 2012. 11?
Last year. So not this year, but last
2011.
12 season, but
2011, 2012, or whatever.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And so this year he was in shape, you know, hopefully going to play, but then it, for whatever reason, didn't happen. And you feel pretty okay with that, right?
Yeah. You know, it's tough. You obviously, you stay in shape. You hope someone calls. You're considered a free agent, and there's a lot of good players out there just waiting to get picked up. But you could blame a lot of things. You know, the CBA structure, the guys had to pay you a certain amount to bring you in, that there's younger players, you know, that the practice squad can only be filled by certain players, that they had these vets, that a player of my size or caliber can only play these certain positions. There's a lot of factors in which you could use excuses.
A lot of excuses.
But that's all they are, is excuses.
But really, if you're a playmaker, or they liked you enough?
If they really liked you and you're in the right system and you fit and then you make plays, and then they pay you and they keep you. And, you know, that goes for a lot of things in life. Yeah. You know, you could very well still be on a couch in Ohio for all your listeners. I learned that today. So you just hope that you meet the right people, that you get put in the right situations. And, you know, that happens in the NFL just like the business world. You know, you could go work for NBC, but if you were on CBS, you'd have your own show. And instead, you're watching television. So it's humbling, but I mean, I still got to play six years.
You got a taste,
fun.
Man.
It was fun.
Now, was the dream as a kid always to be in the NBA or to be a pro athlete?
I think in fifth grade, my mom showed me this like book report. I wrote that I wanted to play either football for Notre Dame and in the NFL, or play basketball for UCLA and work for Fox. I don't know how fifth grade is what I said this. So I didn't do any of them in college, but I played in the NFL. But yeah, I had aspirations to always be the best in athletics. You know, I think that's just the way I looked at it. That I was good. Growing up, I was always the best player on the team. In eighth grade, I was probably not the best player on the team. I played on an inner city basketball team here in California.
Studs.
Four of those guys play in the NBA. And so
they were probably grown ass men.
They were grown men. Gilbert Arenas was on our team. Brandon Heath, who plays over in Europe, was a great basketball player. Pooh Richardson, who plays for the Trailblazers. There's a lot of great players that are on that team. And I ended up playing football in the NBA. So it's just, it just shows that athletically, to all you guys, to all you people listening that are parents, your children will decide what sport to play, and they will get found. You don't have to put your kid in third grade and, you know, the school, the Peyton Manning school, and learn how to be a quarterback already. If they're a good athlete and they learn how to play.
Because you get found when you're 14, not when you're five.
Yeah, you know, and just like you played all sports growing up, and I think that's the healthy way to do it, because you get a taste, you find out what you like, and you don't get burnt out. You kind of go about it at your own pace. And, and you know, as a parent, you wouldn't decide a career on your kid. So that if you're trying to decide a sport, that might be a career, so you got to be careful in what you're picking. That's true. Wouldn't tell your kid, you know, you got to be a photographer, and you don't ever put this camera down. So it's the same thing for, you know, say, oh, you're going to play basketball your career, or tennis, or whatever it is.
Right. But now, why did you want to be the best at what you were doing? Why did you want to be a pro athlete? Why did you want to be, like, what was it mentally? Or was there something that happened when you're growing
when
up?
When I was, I had older brothers that are 10 years and 20 years older. And so I was always challenged.
You're the youngest?
I'm the youngest of three. And my brother was 10 years older. So when I was eight, he was 18. And I remember him coming back from his freshman year of college and asking if I wanted to play basketball. And that was my sport. And I beat him in one-on-one.
When you were eight?
When I was eight and he was 18.
Shut up.
He pushed me in the back and I slammed my head through the garage.
Wow.
My dad comes out and asks what happened. And he said that I got mad and I punted the ball into the garage. And right then I knew that I had won, because my brother not only lost, but he had to make an excuse for his loss and lie about him losing. So I was like, okay, this is the way it's going to go. I'm fine with this. And I just kept, you know, I used that type of motivation. And I never, you know, when people meet me, they're like, oh, you're small, or you're this, or you're that. Mm-hmm. I've never had a different body, so I don't know how that works. I just know the gifts that I was provided with athletically, I use them to the best I knew how. And I just always kind of found a way to get open playing football. In high school, I wasn't that much smaller in high school. I was kind of full grown almost. So, and speed-wise, I was just fine. And in college, I went to Colorado State, where I probably had a earlier opportunity to play, opposed to if I went to an SEC school or Pac-10 school, I'm confident that I would have played at those schools.
You waited to junior,
but I've probably been like, yeah, junior, senior.
Right.
So I got on the field earlier. I got exposed to the talent. I got exposed to the speed, and I learned. And my sophomore year, one of our receivers got drafted, and I was better than he was.
Really?
So my sophomore year, I knew
he was a senior.
He was a senior. My sophomore year, I knew I was going to play. I'm like, all right, my new goal, NFL.
Wow.
Get drafted. And so basically that's what I set my sights on. And that was as high as you can go, right? So at that point, you know, you're in. And I was in it to win it. And so, you know, I trained every day, sophomore, junior year, like I was trying to play in the NFL. If they said run once, I'd ran twice.
Yeah.
If they say 6 a.m. run and 3 afternoon run, I ran 6 a.m. and 3 in the afternoon.
Wow.
I was never a huge lifter because that really didn't matter. I felt like with my size – there's not a big difference between 195 and 205. You're still small, a smaller receiver.
It's more about speed and
it's more about what do you feel comfortable in your body doing, and how can you, you know, what is your weight to play best at? Not what do they think your weight is to play best at. And so I understood that at an early age, and I kind of just went about sports like that. And to, you know, better asking your question, why I wanted to be great, it was I didn't know anything else, to be honest. It was just the way I was going to do it.
Now, interesting. What's been the hardest thing mentally for you through college and the NFL to learn how to adapt? Because when you go from high school to college, I remember my freshman year was like a smack in the face just trying to learn like system, the offense, and new team and everything. What did you do or how did you deal with the mental challenges of college football, big-time college football, and then the immense stress in the NFL?
Yeah. I always say going – when people ask about the speed and everything, I'd say when you play high school football, everyone's ran on a treadmill. So high school football was like walking on a treadmill and talking to the person next to you. That's what high school football was like. College football was like you hit it up 5 miles per hour faster, and now they're asking you questions, and you have to answer questions.
Yeah, like
– just normal questions. Division, it'd be like if we were doing this on a treadmill. We're running now.
Sure.
You know,
it's a little harder.
Sometimes you think of two things. NFL is you turn it all the way up, and they ask you, you know, factor out the X in this equation.
Right.
You know, give me the slope of this line.
Yeah,
you're like, well, I remember that, but how do I do this?
You're running 15 miles an hour.
And you're running as fast as you can. Like – the routes aren't any different and stuff like that, but you're already running full speed and you know you have to catch up and stuff. And so you have to fight that mental. Some way you have to slow the game down. Either you have to be fast enough to where the game's slow, or you have to think fast enough to where the game is in front of you.
Wow.
So that would be the way I would say how to adapt. Now, it's about putting in hours. If you go back to my phone, I was doing it the other day. I have voice recordings of me saying the plays to myself and then thinking about the play, because I didn't learn – looking at a playbook is fine. I learned the plays, but you don't – the quarterback doesn't come out with a book.
Yeah.
He says them to you, so you do have to be able to visualize it. It's not about reading it and putting and being able to do it. It's about hearing it and being able to do it. So I would read myself the plays. It's about finding a way to learn, finding a way to prepare yourself for when the opportunity comes. And I think that's the way I showed up, and I was constantly present, and I was never hurt. I was always on the field. And if someone needed a rep or was tired, I would go get a rep, and you know, I would be open backside. Yeah, I didn't get the ball, but they can never say he was covered backside. Like, hey, maybe we should throw this guy the ball. So, you know, it's about just finding what you do well, finding your approach, and setting yourself apart. And however you have to do that, you know, some guys. And we had guys that would tape, you know, with the white tape on the wrist. If you look on the inside, they have the 10 routes that they have throughout the day, and they're all written down left side of the formation. You don't want to be the guy that's getting wrong. And some guys
do whatever it takes.
They gave them $10 million so they can make more mistakes, and some guys are giving them 10 grand, and you have to be perfect on every play. So you just got to know your role, as they say.
Know your role. It's interesting because, you know, in business or in sports, I always talk about, you've got to put a lot of the time and energy and experience, get the experience first, and then just so you're ready when your number's called. Because just like you said, you got to be ready, you got to be open when they throw you the ball.
Yeah.
If you're not open, then they can't throw you the ball. You got to have the chance to be open.
Absolutely. You know, and it's about setting that groundwork, that experience. It's why would they give you this opportunity?
Right.
You have to prove that you've earned that opportunity. And,
right.
You know, and that's something we talked about at lunch and we'll probably touch on here is getting that experience to prepare yourself and then finding what you want to do to to do that. You right. know what I mean? Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I can do this, I can do that. But no one's going to hire someone for 6 months.
Right.
If someone wants someone that's going to grind for 2 years, and then they'll give you an opportunity. And so, you know, it's got to be – NFL will expose you. And if you're just – if you think you're going to go in there and get a job in 6 months, you're wrong.
Right.
Because they don't – they don't pay seventh rounders until year three. So you have to hang around for at least 3 years. Right. And so
what's the minimum salary for
Salary for a seventh rounder when I was there was $265. Yeah. Now I think it's $365. Gotcha. So it goes up like $25,000 a year. But
so you're not making,
which is nice money, but say you only play one season, you've made $365,000. You probably take home $120,000 because you've got to pay your agent, you gotta pay some bills, you probably owe
student loans or some credit card
bills or your car or whatever. So now you have $120,000. You have – hopefully you graduated from, you know, Mississippi State. If you didn't, you got to go back to school. And
right.
So now you have – where are you? You know what I mean? That's the problem with a lot of guys.
24, 25 and you're
– and you have zero experience and you're you know, just sent out there in the world. And hopefully you've made – you know, you didn't make too many mistakes personally where you have mouths to feed or anything like this. But that's just too common amongst players. You know, they think that – you know, they've had so many coaches and people helping them their entire lives.
They feel indebted to, like
–
when someone asks, you want to give back.
Yeah. So now it's –
well, I think the stat from Sports Illustrated was 78% of NFL athletes go bankrupt 2 years after they retire.
Yeah, the NFL and basketball is pretty bad. And it's that exact reason, because the career is not over 3 years, right? So those guys are almost most definitely going bankrupt because they don't have any money to begin with. And so, I mean, bankrupt, if you had 15 and you have zero, I guess that's considered bankrupt too. Right. But you always hear about the guy who had
– 20 million.
You know, 20 million is bankrupt. Well, it wasn't really 20 million. He spent a lot of it having fun, living the lifestyle. He was kind of risky in some business investments. And then he just didn't understand how it really works. The day he retires, it's over. That paycheck isn't coming. There's nothing coming. People are like, oh, you have an NFL pension. Well, a lot of guys don't officially retire for 2-3 years because they still want to be able to go back in the NFL. Mm. So that hasn't even showed up yet. And that's only about $35,000. If you're used to living off $1.5-2 million, $35,000 you can waste in a weekend.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to figure out, you know, a way to stay afloat. And so they're hoping this new risky business is going to come in. Oh, I gave, you know, $3 million to this sports facility in Florida that's supposed to, you know, turn athletes 40s and, you know, drop 3 tenths. And all of a sudden, oh, wait, the trainer, you know, dipped out. And now we have no money and he's living in the Bahamas. And you're
50 grand a month.
Yeah, you're gone. Yeah. And your name is on the lease and you still owe $9 million. Now your $3 million turned into a $6 million investment and you get none of it back. So that happens. I mean, I think that happened to Mark Brunell. That's happened to a lot of guys that played 14, 15 years. And
wow.
So, I mean, they do a better job of educating you now, but you're just not prepared. The difference is you work your whole life as a normal business person and you're 40 years old. And you're prepared to get money. You've worked your way up. You've steadily stayed afloat. You know how to get money. Well, these kids, myself included, you're 23 years old. They've been, you know, pushed through school in order to just be eligible. And now they hand you $10 million. You don't have any idea how to really turn that $10 million into something that's sustainable for life. How to manage it. Who not to give it to.
Right.
Where to put it. How to save it. How not to, you know, what to spend it on, what not to spend it on. And so it's just gone in an instant.
And the NFL tries to do some education programs, but really there's a disconnect between the people talking and the athletes.
And
they're not listening to them. They're
exactly
not,
right.
They don't really care. They just want to make money.
No one thinks it can happen to them.
Yeah.
You know, right? Yes,
you get
they
those huge checks coming in every week.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it, between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics, because that's who we are.
A friend of mine, Jared Nicholas, who played for a couple seasons for the Rams back in the day and another team, I think the Patriots, he said that the first week after he signed with them, after training camp, he got like $25,000 check or something the first week, and he was just blown away by this check. It was like 20 or 25 grand. And he said next to him was, who's the quarterback for the Patriots before Brady? Bledsoe, right?
Yeah, Drew Bledsoe.
He got a head injury or whatever.
Yeah.
So he was a quarterback then, and he said he was his locker mate or whatever, and he threw down his check because he didn't really care. He's like, whatever. He threw his check down. It's $250,000.
Yeah.
So every week he's getting $250,000 check.
Well, there's a great story about that. Mike Flanagan used to play center for the Houston Texans. He said he was helping Brett Favre clean out his lockers. Brett Favre had two lockers in Green Bay. And he found a check in the back for $425,000 that he had yet to cash. And it was like a year and a half old.
Oh, my God.
He didn't even know it was in the back. He didn't, nor did he care. And he's like, I'll take that. Like, he's like, yeah, by the way, there's just almost $500,000 sitting in the back of the locker.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And now they do direct deposit. Otherwise, these guys would have a serious problem. Because you imagine how awkward it is. Some guys walk in with a $100,000 check to Wells Fargo in your student account that you had last year. And they're like, you should probably invest this. And I mean, they don't know any better. It happened to me.
They're going
to
buy a bunch of cars and stuff.
Hopefully not.
What'd you do with your first check? Your first
I drove a Toyota SR5 all through high school and college. That's the year before they came out with the Tacoma, 89. It was 6 years younger than I was, the car. And so I seventh round, I got a signing bonus.
Well, what's your claim to fame about the seventh round pick?
Seventh round, 251. Marcus Colston was one pick behind me. Still playing.
Still what's his contract with, like?
Oh, I don't know what it is now. I think he's on his third deal. Mm. He must be, because we signed three-year deals or four-year. Now, he might be on the tail end of his second deal. But anyway, right. He's got a lot of money. And so I bought a Ford F-150 out of Houston. That's the first thing I bought. Then I got my mom a new washer and dryer.
There you go.
I was a good son.
You got to get your mom something, right?
You got to get your mom something. I told her I was going to get her a car, but I just didn't have the means yet. It's never happened, but you know, she's doing just fine.
Nice. So tell me about – I want to know more about the mindset of some of the greatest athletes you played with in the NFL and what really separated the guys like like you said, Peyton Manning at lunch, who was just like the most unbelievable quarterback you've played with or caught with.
Uh-huh.
What really separates these guys' minds over maybe a great athlete, but that doesn't perform as well?
You know they're not bullshitting.
Mm.
They speak in very simple terms. They can break down the game or their process just the same way that they play the game or the process. Mm. Athletically, they look like it's not difficult. The game does not look that hard for Peyton Manning. It looks like he has plenty of time. It looks like he like his players are wide open, or every now and then he'll make a great pass. But he knows what he's doing before the game, before the ball is snapped. He's done all the preparation throughout the week, and he speaks the same way. So when you're standing there and he's explaining to you why you need to come out the route downhill, why you should bleed up field on this certain route, you understand why, because he's using, you know, terms that you understand.
Right.
He's relating it to the way you usually run the route. He's explaining the defense and their leverage and how you can use that against them. And then you watch guys like Andre Johnson and Arian Foster that I played with in Houston, and they do the same thing but without words. You know what I mean? You don't have to use a lot of words to get your point across. Right. And that's something I see in the business world that translates, is some of the smartest men just listen. And they let you make the mistakes, and then they know where to capitalize or things like that. And
right.
If you understand, you know how to ask the right questions, you pay attention to the right pieces of information, you can do wonders. And those guys do that. They understood blitz pickup. They understood when they can, you know, run the route a little different. They understand athletically what they can get away with, and they did that. And they exposed people. And you know, you have to know what you just like I said earlier. You have to know what you do well. And fortunately for those guys, they're such talented football players and athletes. They do a lot of stuff better than anyone else. So they just do that, and they say, you know, come catch me if you can, basically. So that's a fun way to look at it, and I think it's easy for people to understand because it looks so easy to them, and it's not. It's not easy to them. They just have they understand themselves. They understand the game. They understand how to tell people. They understand. Right. You know, their awareness is like heightened. I don't know why you knew how to spin. The guy was behind you. How did you know the spin? You know, they're like, I don't know. I just felt it. You know, things like that. Why did you invest in this? I don't know. It sounded like a great idea. You know what I mean? Like everyone did it. Why would you do that? Da, da, da. It's the same thing. And so it's interesting to see those people. And you just hope that they have success off the field like they did on.
Now, why... How do people like that, how do you think a person like Peyton Manning learns how to be that way? Like, how does he transform his mind from just a kid playing football in the backyard, probably going through stress and struggle with high school to football and college with girls and relationships to like, how does someone mold their mind?
I would say first reps.
To think like a champion.
Reps, you know? He's probably never, everything done on the field, he's probably repped out 10 times in person practice, and he's probably repped 100 times mentally already. And so
every situation.
Every situation. I'm willing to bet he's probably been caught by surprise 2 times in his NFL career. You'd never see that guy just get laid out, meleeed from behind, like unless something breaks down protection, like you see a left tackle just get, you know, bulldozed or something. And it's their fault. So I'd say reps, and then that's what creates – he's comfortable. He's comfortable. And then he's confident because he's comfortable. And then when you're confident and you're comfortable and you're prepared, it's up to you. And however successful you are,
things slow down.
Oh, it's like the Matrix all of a sudden. And that happens to every great athlete you see. And I remember it happened to me in college. In the NFL, I think it happened one season. I had the game slow down. And another season, after you don't get a rep, it speeds back up again. But I specifically remember in college against Fresno State my freshman year, all of a sudden it's like, everyone was a step slower than I thought they were.
Easy.
It was just like the game just went on slow-mo on pause. And that's what it must be like for Peyton Manning. Even amongst the fastest humans on the planet, it just looks to him like the game is just a game of chess, that he's sitting back there. He's toying with you with his language. He's pointing at people that doesn't matter. He's doing mic calls, and that's not even the mic, but he's sending, you know, they're doing opposite calls. And so he's definitely a step ahead of people. My favorite is when you listen to, like, those NFL audibles or those sound effects, and they're like, I know what he's saying. When he says this, they're doing this, and then you see him all run to the left, and he goes to the right, and like he knows you think you know. He's the old double reverse psychology.
That's hilarious. Now, you said you got to catch with him a couple times or one time?
One time I caught a couple of Peyton passes. I caught a couple from Tom Brady. Majority of Southern California catch a lot of SC quarterbacks, so I caught a lot from Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart and Matt Castle, your boy Brandon Hance, every now and then. But I mean, you get to that level, it's hard to tell.
And they're all.
I think
amazing.
Peyton puts the ball in a certain place, which is nice. Carson Palmer looks like Robo quarterback. I mean, he just the ball's so sharp, comes out fast. You know, sometimes it's a little behind you or whatnot, but he definitely looks a part in his deliveries.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at Peyton's balls; they're all wobbly.
Right.
You know,
but they're in the right place.
But they're exactly where they're supposed to be. So it's tough to say. But, you know, those quarterbacks, I always wish I played quarterback. But then when I got to the NFL, I'm like, no, thanks.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no.
It's a beating, man.
Yeah, no.
Drew Brees is doing pretty well. He's about your height.
You say it. Maybe he's your height.
He's like
how tall are you?
6'4".
You're 6'4"?
Yeah.
You got to look up your profile.
I'm 6'4". I was 6'4", flat foot at the Ohio State Combine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Never... Never creeped over 6.
That's all right. You played in the NFL. I did it. All right, Smith. What? Tell me some other stories about. We were talking about Tebow. Now, this is a guy that people either love or hate.
Yes.
And you don't have to tell me if you love him or hate him, but you told me you had some interesting conversations with him. And you have to catch with him when you were playing with the Broncos for a little bit. But you actually didn't play a game with the Broncos.
I played preseason game with Tebow. I was second. I was running with the twos, and so I would go in there with Tebow. And actually, I preferred to go in with Quinn at the time.
Right.
Because as a veteran receiver, and you go in with Tim Tebow, a lot of times you weren't sure.
He's going to put the ball on the mark.
Well, not only that, was he going to put the ball on the mark or not, but a lot of times you're like, I'm not supposed to get the ball in this coverage. I'm not supposed to get the ball. Why is he looking at me? You should not be looking at me.
On the third option.
Do not throw the ball over here. There's a guy standing right in front. And then you would throw it.
Interception
and
or whatever.
You look bad because you're like, you run the other direction. You don't want to get meleeed or something like that. And say what you want about guys getting alligator arms, but when you know you're not supposed to get the ball and they throw the ball your way, you're like, this is going to end in disaster. So
yeah.
That would happen a couple times. I had never seen anything like it when Tebow was in Denver. He was beyond a fan favorite. He would scramble in 7-on-7 drills. For all of you listening, 7-on-7 is no alignment. But it's not even 7-on-7. It's actually a quarterback and four receivers. A quarterback, four receivers, and a running back. Right. So we actually have five against their seven. Three linebackers and four DBs. So, and you're supposed to get rid of the ball in like 2-3 seconds, like if there was a rush. Well, Tebow would start scrambling.
Shut up.
During 7-on-7 drills if no one was open. And I would stop running because when I was with the Texans, you don't scramble. You just throw the ball to the back if no one's open. Or bury it and go to the next play. He would start scrambling, and all these guys would run around and stuff, and I wasn't used to it. And then he would throw this bomb, and someone would catch it in the end zone. The crowd would go crazy. I'm like, that's not real. There's no one chasing him. And then every now and then he would do it in real life, so he'd be like, well, I guess it's kind of real. But it was interesting. And I have – my perspective is that he's pretty guarded because, just like you said, you either hate him beyond belief or you absolutely love him more than anything. And he does a great job with all his charities. He gives a lot of his time away to people. I know he was very generous to a lot of underprivileged people, all throughout Denver and pretty much I think he's the got world. A charity in Philippines and Cuba or whatever, all over the world. But he also has this edge about him that he always wants to compete and things like that. Mm-hmm. And some people take that the wrong way, especially within a locker room. Like if you're a backup quarterback, a lot of time you're supposed to be a support system for the starter.
Not trying to get it
or pushing the media towards you or anything like that. And he wouldn't back away. And so there's nothing wrong with that, the way he did it. But he also didn't deflect the attention and stuff. So I could see how that rubbed people the wrong way. But I mean, he won a Heisman Trophy. He got drafted in the first round. Won, I think, two national titles. So you can't mock him as an athlete. As far as where he's going to go, from now on and whatnot, you just wish him the best of luck. He'll be just fine. I think he just signed a couple $1 million to say he likes TiVo, doesn't he? Jeez. I think he does. He's back with TiVo.
TiVo.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. They signed him as a brand ambassador. I was like, dude, I'll be a brand ambassador for anything. The old flip cameras, I'll be a brand ambassador. The wind-up cameras, I'll bring those back. You want a brand ambassador?
Exactly. Now, greatest athlete you were talking about before. Who do you think is the greatest athlete you've ever seen?
The two greatest athletes that I've seen are Reggie Bush and Andre Johnson. That I've seen in person once is LeBron James. I saw him play against the Lakers.
I've seen him play. He's a freak.
And so I like to put those guys kind of all in the same category because I think not only are they athletically superior, they're obviously great mindsets when it comes to sports, but they're great athletes too. They could probably play any professional sport. Just so happened they played the one they could play.
Right.
I mean, it'd be if you said LeBron wanted to go play goalie for the U.S. national team, he's going to be the greatest goalie I've ever seen. No one's going to get by this guy. If you said
or receiver LeBron, in the NFL,
or he can play tight end receiver, or if you just say, hey, he picked up a tennis racket, wait till you see him play. Wow. None of us would be surprised if all of a sudden he was smashing 100 mile power serves on That's people. True. I mean, the thing with the tennis racket, his reach would be sideline to sideline.
Unreal, man.
And the same goes for like Reggie Bush. I bet feet wise, it'd be tough for him. You give him a soccer ball or something like that. And so that's what I always tell people when they're like, "Who do you think the greatest athlete is?" I was like, "Not only do you have to think athletically, you have to think can they play another sport?" Because of course you're going to think like, "Can a basketball player play football or a football player play basketball?" Mm. But I would always say like, is it Charles Rogers? No, Sean Rogers, the D-tackle that used to play for your Browns and a couple other, and the Lions, was one of the freakiest athletes I've ever seen. He was like 360 pounds, like a 360 dunk.
Jeez.
But he could never play in an NBA game. He wouldn't make it up and down the court. But you put 360 pounds on anyone, and for them to dunk a basketball, you'd be like, you have so much power.
It's impressive.
It'd be ridiculous.
That's impressive. Now, I once heard this somewhere. I can't remember where, if this is a documentary or if there's some ESPN analyst or someone said that the best champions in the world have one of two things. They have a belief in themselves, a huge belief in themselves, or a huge belief in their faith or God. And when you look at it, when you look at interviews of guys after they win a game or something, you either see a guy who's super cocky, who's like, yeah, I did this, me, but they so believe that they're like a god themselves, that they're so athletic, and it's like all on them. It's that belief that allows them to like be so successful and dominate on everyone. Or you got the Tebow who's like, God first, you know, put my faith in God, who's like all God, faith, belief in something else, that he gets his strength from something else. Now, do you think that that's a true...
I could get behind that.
You get behind that? Yeah, you can have a belief? Because if you don't have the confidence and belief in yourself, either way,
yeah,
you can't be successful.
I was kind of raised to be open-minded to all religions.
Yeah.
And so I think they all come from the same thing,
sure,
a belief that you're not here alone, that you're right, not... you all share something, whether where you disagree about what you call that God, mm-hmm, or who is the messenger, the main messenger, that's right, fine. Everyone believes that you should be good to other people,
yeah,
that you feel this spirit inside you, that this world was not created for something. So I can get behind that because I believe that.
Yeah.
And I believe that, you know, I'm put here for a reason, that right, there's a plan, that things happen to me and I'm supposed to go forward and make people around me better.
Right.
And to, you know, whether it's part of a team, whether individually I do that and people rally behind me, however that works, I believe in that. But you ultimately have to have a belief in yourself too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, because that my only argument would be like, well, there's plenty of guys who, you know, those old school documentaries where he says, oh, I, you know, used to drive around this neighborhood and I told my mom I'd buy her a car. I'm betting there's tons of athletes who didn't make it that also said that to their moms, right, as well as I bet there's a ton of heavy Christians or Catholics that didn't make it in the NFL,
true,
as well. So you have to have a combination
of both, yeah,
I think is what would really happen, or
right,
what's the truth. But yeah, I could get behind that. Yeah, I mean, it's about, I don't know, it is about an inner self. You don't expect to lose.
Right.
You find ways to win. You change, you're not scared of change. You change your plans. You can adapt. You,
yep,
separate yourself somehow. You understand things better. You communicate. You do something that separates you,
yeah,
and constantly. And those are the people that I find that are great, whether it's in business or in sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've dabbled in broadcasting, and there's these people that make mistakes and they just run right over them and they don't even think of them. And the things, you know, those people, I'm just like, wow, I'm like, I used the wrong word there. And I really like, now I'm even scared to say that word again. You know, they're like, oh, don't even worry about it, blah, blah, blah. It's the same that goes for the guy in business that made one mistake in the stock,
yeah,
market. He's like, happens. We're going to go on the next investment.
Right.
This is going to do well. Same in sports. Oh, you ran the round route once. Don't worry about it. They're going to throw it to me
that
next time.
Skin and they can bounce, yeah, back.
You know, it's just, it's amazing. And it's they're resilient, you know,
yeah,
and, you have to be, because
yeah,
as you get higher and higher, there's more people poking and prodding you, and there's more haters. If, you know, no one boos,
right,
the mailman, is what Reggie Jackson used to say.
Right, right.
You know, if you can hide and do nothing, and you'll be,
yeah,
fine. But if you start getting climbing the ranks in anything, you're more exposed.
Exactly. Now, what? Why do you think these are great athletes, super successful champions in football and any type of sport? Why do you think when they retire, when they stop the game, that some of them can translate that mindset and that attitude into the business or life, and others can't? You got guys who are committing suicide a lot recently.
Yeah.
You got guys who go bankrupt and then who never get back on their feet, but they're once this amazing champion and really great. Why can't guys, or why can guys, and then why can't they translate?
I think there's a bigger emphasis now on creating a network while you're playing.
Mm.
And getting a team behind you and getting a team to join, getting people in your corner now when you're playing. Because too often when guys are playing, everyone wants something from them.
Yeah.
Hey, I got this investment. Hey, can you – a t-shirt company. Hey,
mm-hmm,
you know, this record label I'm starting. Hey, can you do this? Can you do this for me? But, and everyone's trying to take from them, take. So they become really guarded and they shut down. And then your career's over. And those people disappear because the fame and what you can give,
sweet,
them is over. And now no one's in your corner. And so you're at it all alone.
Jeez.
And you're probably in your mid-30s.
And you're depressed because you're not playing ball
anymore. And you're
anymore.
Depressed and you have your own thing. And no one's in your corner but maybe your wife who's nagging you about this. And you're always at the house now. And your whole life basically gets flipped upside down.
Jeez.
Time, your time spent different. Your money spent. Everything changes.
Media is not a
You're no longer relevant. Yeah. And so some guys understand that before they retire. And I would say those are the guys that the transcend careers pretty well. Mm-hmm. They go and go into business. They become a solid investor and things like that. There's few guys that have dominated in a couple of industries, and I couldn't even name them off the top of my head. But, a lot of times it's golfers. They're very individual, and they do a good job of creating their network and a worth, and then they can do something golf-oriented, and whether it's clubs or they learn how to design golf courses and they make money this way. When you play a team sport, it's really hard to do that unless you start a camp. But even then, how many kids are going to pay – $20 million to design a golf course. No one's going to pay me $20 million to design a football field. Let me guess. It's 120 yards long and it's 53 and a half yards wide. Dang it. I got no money out of that. There's just not a lot of opportunities. And guys don't realize that. And they think that they have, I fell victim to it a little bit too, is you retire and you assume that you have this this aura of invincibility that no one can do this and stuff like that. And you do have it, but only in playing football. But once you're done playing football,
you're gone. You're human, just like everyone else.
Exactly right. You're exposed for a lot of different reasons that you don't have a credibility in anything. Oh, you want to be in the media? You look at a guy like Tiki Barber, right? Mm-hmm. Immediately thrown into Good Day LA. He should have been on air in the middle of nowhere practicing getting reps on how to speak in front of people and what to say because, that's not natural for anyone to go do stuff like that. So a lot of guys just get exposed really fast and they lose confidence
in themselves.
That's
when they're most vulnerable is when you're done.
You got to learn how to – and just how you did it in the NFL, you got to learn that you got to be willing to start small again and build up your career. And unfortunately for some guys, it's when they're 35 and they're not humble enough to start over. Their ego's too big. They think, why isn't anyone hiring me as a CEO? Because
you have no experience.
You have no experience. And the thing is, you have that mentality. And I know I would be a good manager of people. I know I could be a good motivator, a good coach. Right. But I don't have the experience to deserve that opportunity.
Right.
Those days are gone when, back in the day, they used to hire the baseball players to immediately be the manager, or you'd be a player manager, Bill Russell.
They have no clue.
Now, no way. There's no way you're going to walk right off and get that opportunity. So you have to start over at something, and you really have to find something you're passionate about. And if you spend your whole life being passionate about football, you never have time to be passionate about anything else. You just hope that you hit the ground running with something else. Otherwise, hopefully, gave yourself enough of a bankroll to buy time in order to find that passion. And some guys didn't, and some guys, spend the money too fast. And now you're just like we were talking about. You're in the hole hoping that one of your investments hits.
Right.
It's a big risk. Lewis Howes T-shirt company is not doing too well. We're living out of the basement.
Man, so what's one thing about you, one of your passions that a lot of your fans and maybe some of your friends don't know about?
I really enjoyed making people laugh. I got asked to do a stand-up comedy set for the Houston Dynamo, the soccer team. The Dynamo's a soccer team out there. And they had their Major League Soccer All-Star thing. And one of the players came up and he's like, hey, we heard you're willing to get out there and say some funny stuff. We've seen some of the things you do. Would you be willing to get on stage and entertain the crowd for 5 minutes? I was like, so what is everyone doing? And he's like, well, some guys are gonna tell some jokes, some guys are just gonna tell some stories. I was like, oh, okay. And so I remember one night I had a couple of drinks and I sat my buddy down and I grabbed the Rock Band mic stand and I told him some jokes, and I thought, if I can make one of my best friends laugh like with a set, I'll do all right. And I remember at the end, he's like, you had two funny jokes. Those are two. He didn't laugh. He just told me those two jokes might do well out of 10. And I was, because I had no idea how to tell a joke.
You were just an expert.
And so I didn't know if that's what they were going to do or not. So we got up there. I got to the event. He said there was going to be 500 people there. 2,500 people there.
Jeez.
You're going to go on stage. Guy Tori, the little comedian, was the MC. I'm like, oh, good. Someone get me a cocktail. I need to loosen up. So I had a glass of – I think I had a Red Bull vodka. And I was all amped up, liquid courage. And so I went up there and I told jokes and I just killed – I thought I killed it. Now, if it was your first time ever telling jokes on stage, I would – you could go YouTube it. I would be impressed if you didn't think it was decent at worst. You're like, okay – I mean, I played off
a little applause.
Yeah, I played off the role of being, you know, football. I used some of those jokes about how, you know, football players get a lot more tail than soccer players and stuff like that. And so it went over well and stuff. And I really enjoyed it. And it really got me going. And so I enjoyed entertaining people in that area. Not necessarily like I want to be a stand-up comedian or anything like that. But I enjoy
Making people laugh,
having fun, you know, enjoying a situation, being able to relate to people and stuff like that, because that transcends through everyone. Everyone wants to have a good time. Everyone wants to smile. And if you're not, that's your own fault. You know, you should be having some fun in what you're doing. Otherwise, you shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly.
So I kind of, I don't know how where that works, but I know in the business world, whether it's giving a presentation, I won't be scared. I'm comfortable doing that. I'm comfortable, you know, making people making other people comfortable, whether it's asking them, you know, the good questions or relating to their business and things like that. So I'm hoping that stuff kind of, you know,
can use that.
Works well, and I can use that. And I don't know if that means that, you know, I start asking you questions here, but that's, you know, that's what that's what I'm hoping.
Right, cool. So what do you think, we'll start to wrap it up here, what do you think makes, in one sentence, what makes great people great?
Not the easiest question because you have to do it in one sentence. What makes great people great?
In a couple sentences, isn't it?
They separate themselves, I would say.
It's a good football analogy.
As a receiver, yeah, especially you separate yourself. But whether that's taking a chance, whether that's working harder, whether that's never giving up, I think ultimately you separate yourself from the pack.
Yeah.
That way, not like lone wolves do well,
right?
Because you need to be part of the team and stuff like that. But you separate yourself through your performance, and I think the greatest—that's what they do. You know, there might have been, you know, 10 CEOs, but when they get their opportunity to be in charge, they take the business to another level.
Right.
There might have been 2 scouts, but he went out there and scouted these 10 players and found 4 great draft picks. You know, you might be asked to type up, you know, 10 pages, and he did 15 pages consistently. And so over the course of a year, he quadrupled everyone else's performance. Whatever you do to separate yourself, how you can separate yourself, I would encourage you to do that, because I know that's what I did. When I was on practice squad and I was asked to be on scout team, I would scout the other team's corners and the teams were playing receivers. So I would give the corners on my team, because I wanted to know why those receivers were starting and I wasn't. I would give them a book on the players they were they were going to play, as well as I would have stuff for our receivers to look at, and so we were prepared to play. So I was preparing both sides of the ball. I understood why people were making it as receiver and what defenses were doing to try to take away receivers. So I learned double, and I got the exposure, and I turned, you know, a time on practice squad scout team into a time where I could really learn the craft.
Right.
You know, just like you said, putting in the groundwork. And I separated myself. There was other scout team receivers, and they got cut, and I played week 8, and I did pretty well. So I would say the greatest people separate themselves.
Interesting. So what's next for you? Where can we find you online first, and what's next for you?
Twitter handle, DavidAnderson89. I currently have a digital media job with Package Sports Entertainment, helping out with EA Sports and their NFL films. I'm going to continue my search for education. There's a couple programs through the NFL about a coaching academy that I'm going to go to, as well as there's a program in Stanford and an advanced broadcast boot camp thing I'm going to do. So I'm continually just searching for my, I don't want to say next passion, because I'm passionate about all these things, but about something I really want to get behind for the next 5 years. In the meantime, I'm always out there, you know, trying to connect with people like you. I really admire what things that you've done on LinkedIn and hearing about your story and your transition. It's impressive, and it's honestly inspiring to all athletes. And, you know, on air, I want to offer my ability to connect with some other guys to you and everyone listening that, you know, I think this is great. And, we talked about how Facebook, everyone just bashes you or says bad things, and LinkedIn and getting together with people and just offering, you know, a conversation, get a cup of coffee and see if there's any way everyone can help each other. That's the way, you know, everyone moves forward. And you do great stuff online.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I think everyone's got a great following. If, you know, I'll be getting more involved in this side of business and and the internet landscape and media and social media. And so, you know, I'm hoping to, you know, follow kind of in your footsteps in that landscape, and then it'll be fun. And so hopefully within the next couple of years, you'll see me doing something where you can interview me again in another aspect.
Sooner than that, hopefully. Yeah. Sooner than that. So make sure to check David out at DavidAnderson89 on Twitter. And if you're listening to this right now, go ahead and send him a quick tweet. Let him know you enjoyed this interview. And other than that, man, appreciate you, brother.
Absolutely.
Let's make it happen. And there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this interview with my man, David Anderson. Awesome story, and I'm really excited to see what this guy has got coming up with next after retirement. Now, again, thanks so much, everyone, for leaving all the five-star reviews. Some more people I saw who are leaving reviews is Todd Bowen, King Large. We've got Austin Henry. I saw Vegan Mafia left me a cool review. The Shadow Boxer, Sean Malarkey, Kara Singleton. So, again, lots of people leaving five-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't done so yet, please share the love with me over there on iTunes and leave a quick five-star review. Other than that, guys, looking forward to sharing with you guys some amazing interviews coming up soon. Stay tuned. Leave us a comment over on the blog at schoolofgreatness.com if you enjoyed this, and I'll catch you guys next time.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
At Metro, get an iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system for $99.99. Take amazing pictures and share them instantly. And don't put up with life's yada yada.
Yada yada.
Like photo bombers. Zoom, crop out,
yada yada,
and bye.
You don't take yada yada in life, don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Get iPhone 12 with 5G with no activation fees and nada yada yada. Only at Metro by T-Mobile. Switch to Metro, bring your ID. This offer isn't available for customers currently at T-Mobile or that have been with Metro in the past 180 days.